Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster, and you can find me online at codefoster.com. Who are you guys?
My name is Henry Goddard. I'm co-founder of Beagle.
And I'm George Lifchitz. I'm also co-founder of Beagle.
Okay, you guys are part of a group called Beagle, and Beagle is one of the Microsoft Ventures startups that we've been talking so much about on Code Chat. What does Beagle do?
Well, in short, we taught a computer to read contracts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I hope that conjures up some questions. But essentially, we've developed a custom grammar set. So we use NLP, natural language processing, to comb through a MSA, end user license agreement, you name it.
So these are real life contracts. You're not talking about like a computer concept of a contract. We're talking about like legal contracts and stuff, right?
Very much so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so any electronic representation, or we even have some optical character recognition hooked up. So if you have a hasty scan of a contract and you need some computer's opinion on it, we basically pull out the responsibilities, liabilities, terminations, and sort of aggregate that in a top-level report for you, and then give you a kind of common hub where you can invite people in to collaborate and negotiate on.
Okay, now let me just give you my first impression here.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of room for improvement in this space, because you know that to understand a contract, I'm going to have to hire a lawyer in many cases. And we know that lawyers are expensive. And so if I can teach a computer to do it, and it can do it in the blink of an eye, this seems like a great space to be in. Am I right?
Yeah. And we're actually very careful to say we'll never replace a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And that, you know, gets us some laughs here and there. But our CEO is a lawyer, and he'll be the first to make a lawyer joke. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me about this aggregation. You're looking through the contract, and you said you're pulling out what? Your liabilities?
Well, actually, why don't we just take a look?
Okay, cool.
Seeing is believing.
Yeah.
So we can go to one of the agreements that we've already analyzed previously. And right now it's just loading this top-level report that Henry was talking about. We'll go right there. So yeah. We give you this top-level report here, as Henry was saying, and what we've done is we've pulled out the responsibilities, the liabilities, the terminations, and external references. So that's links and other references to maybe other agreements that you might be concerned about, or that might change the context or the meaning of this one.
So, okay.
So I don't know.
So that's interesting, because a contract gives you zero at first glance. Like, you don't have anything at first glance. This is, without doing any work at all, it's giving me something at first glance, right?
That's right. Actually, we use the tagline, we bring you to 0 to 80% comprehension very quickly.
Okay.
So back to the replacement of lawyers point, we don't actually ever say, you know, sign this. We never offer any advice like a lawyer might.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
It's very much, here's some things you should be interested in. And then, hey, if some of these are rubbing you the wrong way, then now you've got a nicely aggregated collection of the agreements you do, or the clauses you do want to send off to your lawyer.
Okay.
And you can actually just invite them right to this common hub and then have the negotiation over a phone call and see in real time the changes and talk about what you're altering.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's this view of the contract. Is it also a bit of a collaboration between you and the other parties in the contract?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you can actually go into the detail view here, which tries to give you the text of the contract. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is we parse out each individual sentence in the contract and try to assign some metadata to it. So you can see this one's highlighted here. So that's a sentence which we've tagged as a responsibility. And then the collaboration aspect is like, you know, you can just start editing here, and then you can do red lines here. It'll say that I edited the clause. And then I can, if I wanted Henry to give his feedback, then I just invite him here and say. And then the next time he logs on, he'll get a notification and he'll be invited to participate in this comment thread, as well as edit the sentence, say if he likes it or not, and yeah.
Yeah, so traditionally this would be done with a hasty Word doc attachment to an email with a, hey, I've left a comment, can you give me your feedback? So now it's a very collected one-point email.
So no more like version 3 final,
exactly.
new final,
you know,
2?
Underscore V2, underscore V1, underscore final, yeah. No, so it's very much, I get an email on my phone, hey, Henry isn't happy with this agreement or this clause. Can you give your feedback or give the thumbs up? We can go ahead and sign this. So I've, in the past, speaking with people who need to move quickly on agreements, the wait is when it goes off to internally even.
Yeah.
Hey, we need at least three thumbs up on this from three different people. And I, like, short of printing it out and walking into their office and getting them to look at it, there's really no faster way.
Yeah. It's enough of an advantage. You know, the last, I don't know, few years or months at least, we've, instead of sending Word files and maintaining my Word file, your Word file, and let's go back and forth on email about the changes or whatever our workflow was, now I always put that Word file in my OneDrive and share an edit link, and then you and I can be working. At least we're working on the same source, so that's a big advantage.
Oh, yeah.
But then this is like that times 10, because you're working on the same thing, mm-hmm. but you also have all this tooling around the social, the comments, the modifications.
So I haven't used Office 365 mm-hmm. much, but is it, can I see each keystroke that the other person's making if
yeah.
you happen
in
to
the
look
latest
at it?
Version, in the latest version, like
cool.
as
so
I move
much
my
like
mouse
Google
around.
Docs. Mm-hmm. Cool, yeah. We've kind of, we thought of that sort of level of granularity, but we, you know, if you're negotiating something with someone on the other side of the fence and you're in the middle of typing, it's kind of nice knowing that they're not going to see it until you're perfectly done with
yeah,
the sentence.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're not, I mean, I know when people are over my shoulder, I'm making typos and, you know, overthinking it, but this is very much like almost a game of chess at this point because
yeah.
you're putting your
that's
changes,
a good way to put it.
It's very transactional. So mm-hmm. you apply an edit, there'll be, if George was the owner of this agreement, he'd have the option to approve or disapprove mm-hmm. That edit, and then you know you move forward to the next clause that you're up for negotiation.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, how about we get a little bit technical here? We've got a technical audience. A lot of the people watching are developers, mm-hmm. and in fact, a lot of the people watching are web developers, and you guys are working on a web stack, right?
Perfect.
It's my favorite stack, by the way.
George, hit me up with the stack. Let's go. What do we got?
Right.
What's under the hood?
So our backend is all built in Python.
Okay.
The reason we do that is because there's a lot of natural language processing and some artificial intelligence that goes into you know what we bring to the screen here. So Python's particularly good for doing those sorts of machine learning, those heavy computations. So we work.
Let me dive into that a little bit. Yeah. Do you mean that Python as a language is just good at those things, or do you mean that Python as a platform has libraries for doing those things?
Yeah, totally the libraries. So
okay.
right now we're built on top of NLTK, and there's some scikit-learn going on for the machine learning. And yeah, I think Python's best suited to that. I'm personally more of a front-end guy, so mm-hmm. I'd love to talk about that, but... you know, my expertise is more on the front end.
But then Python yeah. is just also a modern language with a good syntax, so it's yeah. not so bad diving into there. It's not like you've got a COBOL back end and
exactly.
it's painful yeah. whenever there's, you know,
yeah. so,
change.
Yeah, George and I both front end, but every now and then we'll have to dive right into the Python if an endpoint's not
yeah.
treating us right. So,
okay, well, let's yeah. just leave those guys behind
yeah.
and talk front end.
Yeah, yeah.
sure, yeah, sounds good. So the front end is built in React.
Okay.
Kind of an interesting story behind that. We started out with Angular.
Mm-hmm.
I think both Henry and I were never totally proficient JavaScript developers when we just started. We were sort of brought on to see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the project just started snowballing, we decided that you know we needed to invest a lot of resources into learning JavaScript properly. And I think the transition from Angular to React, especially in the early stage when we did perform that transition, was pretty crucial because React is just so developer friendly that it helped us, it really boosted our productivity.
How did you describe that to me before?
I said it was a super exponential increase in our productivity.
Yeah, super exponential increase, all right.
Yeah, it was a bit of a...
I think you just finished a pretty heavy component that was flying, like working really
yeah.
well, and Jeremy... coincidentally had prompted, what do you think of React? And that was super exponential, yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty enthusiastic with that, but either
That's
way.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love those moments where you just kind of want to like push yourself back from your desk and put your hands in there and be like, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a couple of those moments every week, actually, yeah.
yeah.
It's as we get better and better at it, it's like, how did we ever use anything else?
You know, we recently interviewed on Code Chat Slope, and they're working with React as well, and you
mm-hmm.
guys are in the same incubator in Microsoft Ventures,
yeah.
and so I'm sure you guys have been able to put your heads together somewhat.
Totally. Yeah, we were there the day they decided to do it.
Yeah.
And there was a good thumbs up that came up over the cubicle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you want to show us some?
Some React?
Yeah.
Well, sure. Let's see what we can do here.
So George is a Vim guy.
So awesome.
Hopefully we have some Vim heads out
Vim
there.
Vim is super geeky.
Yeah, so...
Is it possible quickly to blow that font up a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There we go.
All right, so I guess this is like our entry point to the app.
Uh-huh.
This is not a piece of code that we work on all the time because this is one thing you sort of get started with.
Is it kind of a master page?
Yeah, it's pretty much the master page which defines that report page that we were looking at earlier.
Okay.
So, I guess one thing we can talk about with respect to React is everything is components, and mm-hmm. you actually write your HTML right in the JavaScript. So, this is an example of some JSX. So, this is actually a JavaScript file. You can see that there's like some JavaScript logic going on there. These are all functions. This is also ES6, which is a nice thing that Webpack brings to the table for us. It makes that a whole lot easier. And then, so what we have here is like some divs which look very familiar to any web developer, but then we have these custom components like header and sidebar, and these are all components that we wrote, mm-hmm. and they're all consisting of subcomponents themselves. So this sidebar, for example, let's see if we can... So we require that from... components sidebar.
Oh, you're not just Vim. You're like good Vim. I'm Vim, but I'm not good Vim.
Yeah, it takes some practice, but there's still a lot to learn. Anyways, so the sidebar here. So this is just more HTML looking JavaScript here. We've defined this nav button component, and there's all sorts of props and stuff we can pass to it.
So the properties that you pass to a component are custom as well?
Right, yeah. So, for example, this nav button component, the properties that we're passing down are to, name, and description. So I'm not sure if this...
If you kind of follow this component path down into the subcomponents, at some point you just have to make sure that you're writing real-life HTML, right?
Yeah, at its core, you're still drawing divs and spans and whatever else need be, but the appeal of the component is that you sort of can logically separate each individual UI sort of element.
Mm-hmm.
And each UI element is just composed of the properties that you pass down into it and whatever state might exist inside that element. So an example of a property is like this nav button here. We give it a name, so that's just a string. And when we render the component, we just tell it to... This is a bit of a roundabout code, but we do just drop the name in right there.
Okay.
And so we know that if we make a nav button with the property name equals hello world, then that nav button is going to render with the text hello world.
Okay.
And then there's state as well. So an example of where you might use state is like if there's a drop down menu,
mm-hmm.
and you want it to be there's a state where the menu is open and the menu is closed. So that state doesn't necessarily pertain to any other structure of the web page,
mm-hmm.
but the state is very important to how the component itself functions. So, React provides these really good abstractions for us to work with, and the way that these components are isolated makes it really easy to sort of understand what your code is doing at any given point. So,
does it make it easier for testing since it's all JavaScript?
Testing is probably one of our weakest points at the moment.
Yeah.
But I have, for what we've
read...
Well,
you're a startup.
Yeah, we're a startup. There's
we're pretty good on the back end, so hats off to the back end developers we've got. I think we're at 60 or 70% coverage on our unit tests, which
That's
is
decent.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
0% on the JavaScript, but hey, we'll get there, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, but it does make it good for testing from what I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I could speak more to that, but... You know, yeah, we've got a long ways to go still.
Yeah.
Do you have time to talk a little bit about the React router?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So One of the business needs that we were grappling with recently was, let's say we invited Henry to this individual sentence. We mm-hmm. wanted him to be able to, you know, click a link in the email and have it come right to, you know, this editor box.
Oh, right. Yep.
So that was a bit of a challenge at first, but then realized we could use React Router to just...
Is that your own product or is that...
No, that is an open source library.
Okay.
It's one of the more popular React libraries.
Is it client-side routing?
Yeah, client-side routing.
Does it use hash links?
It can.
Okay.
It can also use, it can also use in tandem with a node server, for example. It can generate those routes on the back end and work pretty seamlessly with a client-side routing sort of structure as well.
So. Now, at the end of the day, though, I've got to basically browse to this document, and then I've got to scroll it down to that edit or that field, right?
No, actually, show them.
I can.
I mean, it scrolls it for me, though.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But that's what my code needs to do is scroll it, right?
Yep.
So if I refresh the page, then it'll scroll it for me. But the key part here is that we've included the sentence index that we're concerned about right here in the URL.
So, okay.
When it eventually does load, it'll bring me right there.
Okay.
So yeah, but that's actually all done with React Router, and that was a bit of a project that we were taking on a couple of weeks ago, I think. So yeah, but it's pretty cool. So everything is URL addressable, and you know, we've still got a ways to go with you know, maybe this like hash can go away, but anyways, that's sort of beside the point.
Now, you guys are using the web stack. Are you dedicated to the browser, or are you also working on mobile?
I think for now we're dedicated to the browser.
Okay.
Mobile is something that we definitely want to support.
Yeah, so the business case of, you know, I'm walking around on the golf course and I'm the CFO and the company needs my signature on the thing or my thumbs up and they can execute it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, getting an email and I'm in the clubhouse trying to open this thing on my BlackBerry or mm-hmm. whatever your poison is, you just get a quick UI from Beagle
mm-hmm.
with the exact clause you're interested in and then some sort of feedback tools, whether that be a thumbs up, a check mark, or a comment. And then it's, you know, way less painless, way more likely that I'm actually going to do it and not pretend I didn't see the email.
That's what I'm seeing as successful these days is when we've got targeted UIs for targeted scenarios where it's the same document, but that we imagine that it's probably pretty unlikely for the CFO on the golf course to need to browse through and look mm-hmm. at all of these clauses and things like that. And maybe, like you said, he just needs to do a buy-off. And so he just needs to see that one paragraph
That's
and
right.
have that one big button that says, make it so.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's all it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, mobile is something we definitely want to support in the long term. Like that app that Henry described, like just a quick sort of approve or reject would be pretty useful. And I guess I can do a little plug for React Native here. So,
plug away.
Yeah. It's like.
Are you using it?
No, not at the moment.
Okay.
But
working toward it.
But
yeah.
Usually it comprises most of his dreams these days.
Yeah, totally. So it's just this cool framework that Facebook has built along with React. And what it lets you do is it lets you write mobile apps in JavaScript. So mm-hmm. right now it's iPhone only, but I think the plan is to eventually support Android and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
Much in the same way that your code will look like HTML right in the JavaScript,
mm-hmm.
React Native code, which works with native mobile UI views like a scrolling list view or a top bar or whatever they mm-hmm. May be. React Native lets you write JavaScript code very similar to this and it'll render like a native mobile app, which is pretty cool.
I feel like we're in an interesting time and space right now where there's so much UI fragmentation. You know, users, they go down to the cell shop and they find a phone that they just like. It feels good. It looks good. You know, I like the feel of it in my hand. And it's very much a consumer choice, a soft choice. It's almost an artistic decision, right, to mm-hmm. own this phone. And now they kind of adopt this UI mechanism this UI paradigm with all these UI mechanisms like lists and back buttons and stuff like that. And then that feels good and right normal to them. It feels like a real app. It's almost like we've redefined native to not mean you're running code that's, you know, native to the processor, but you're running an app that feels like the platform. That's, mm-hmm, the modern definition of native.
I like that. Yeah.
And so it's, I mean, I almost, I dislike the fact that we have so many platforms and so many instantiations. It's a hurdle for us to overcome as developers, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're the best positioned as web developers, in a way, so that we don't have to have a team that's dedicated to a platform and then, you know, a team that's dedicated to each of the platforms. Instead, we can kind of cultivate one skill set and then just get creative about how to instantiate that in the different platforms. Does that sound right to you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, and that's one of the biggest selling points, I think, of React Native, is that you cultivate this JavaScript skill set, mm-hmm, and then that translates very well to writing web-based code, or it translates to writing iOS apps and hopefully in the future Android apps.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is going to be a bit of time spent on making sure that those native views look kind of natural between the different implementations of the app, but mm-hmm, it's still like, you know, it's a pretty exciting concept because, you know, just the prospect of knowing one language and knowing just a couple of useful frameworks and, you know, ideas, you can build apps that work seamlessly across platforms. So,
for all its warts, JavaScript is just awesome for the fact that it's everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm, you know, here you are using it to make your startup real, mm-hmm, make it, you know, bring it to reality. But then if you come over to MySpace, I'm working with drones and IoT devices a lot, and guess what I'm writing? JavaScript. Yeah. You know, so same exact language, and all of a sudden it's running on little tiny chips, you know? Mm-hmm. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think Node and, you know, the transition from browser-only React, or JavaScript, browser-only JavaScript to, you know, server-side, and, you know, now people are putting it in IoT devices, as you were saying, and, you know, JavaScript is everywhere now.
What was the joke Uli made the other day about JavaScript and Java?
Oh, I bet I know it.
Yeah,
there's a few of them. That Java is to JavaScript as ham is to hamster.
Yeah, I can't remember it, but we're not divided. That's a bad word, but our two other dev shop of four, George and I spend our days on the front end, and then our expert natural language processing guys handle all the back end stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
So in addition to being like really good AI and NLP guys, they also happen to have like really good like back end skills. And in fact, they're even DevOps at this point.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we kind of all have to be now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really refreshing to have that kind of, you know, those guys wearing all those hats while we're just up putting the lipstick on it.
Yeah, right.
I'm from a pretty small town, so when I try to explain to people what I do, I think I'm the only computer scientist I know in town anyways. And I explain it like, well, we're building a house in Seattle. That's what I'm doing there. Except that house is an app. And I'm the guy screwing the drywall in and mudding it and painting it and making it look nice.
Yeah.
And then all the hard stuff is handled by the back end guys.
They've got to get that because they all have phones in their pocket, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They've got to get that. Mm. Cool. Well, do you guys enjoy working for a startup? You guys are in a space where you don't have the luxury of a tremendous amount of stability and predictability, and you don't always know what you're going to be doing tomorrow. You don't have a narrow responsibility. You've got a pretty broad responsibility. You've got some risk. You've got a lot of change. How's that?
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah? That's your first?
Yeah. Well, and it kind of just happened, too. George and I, we're still in school, technically. We still have to get those last few credits, but we're working on a project together, and that's how I met our CEO. I was in that class with George, and he was from an old work placement I did, and he's like, I'm trying to bootstrap this idea about scanning contracts. Like, you guys look like you can work pretty cheap, and I brought George in, and we just started hacking away on it, and then got a couple of good bounces and accepted into Microsoft Ventures, and now we're here in Seattle. So in a way, like, I did choose this career, but in another way, it was kind of just thrust upon us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, it totally evolved so much, like, as you were saying, from the day we were, you know, just meeting Kian for the first time, and it was just an idea in his head, and then, you know, here we are, Like, even though it was, like Henry said, it was like thrust upon us, like it was sort of an opportunity that fell out of the sky, but we've rode that wave for quite a while now, and the app is just so much more than it was in the beginning, and it's very rewarding to see sort of that progress and know that you were a pivotal part in it.
So. Do you have any advice for, let's say there's somebody in the crowd who's a developer and who's like, you know what, that's pretty exciting, the idea of jumping into a startup and making something happen from the ground up and maybe seeing a ton of growth from the get-go, from where I start to where I help them take it. How can they prepare for that?
Yikes. I didn't think I'd be giving advice on how to do this so soon.
But you're the perfect person too, in a way, because that's exactly what you're going through, you know?
I try to approach this experience as sort of just like, you know, in the absolute worst case scenario, you still learn a ton. It's helpful when you have a good idea and you believe in it quite a bit and you're seeing a lot of success. Like that's quite promising for, you know, and it feels good being involved in it because, you know, you don't feel like it's going nowhere. But the thing with a startup is that sometimes there is that risk, right? And so to anyone who wants to jump into a startup, I'd say just approach it from a very, you know, positive mental attitude. Just say that, you know, even if it folds tomorrow, you're still going to have learned so much and, you know, been part of so many valuable experiences that, you know, even in the worst case scenario, it's going to turn out really well for you. But, you know, you also do have to have the luxury of being in a financially stable situation and stuff. And, you know, as students, I guess we live pretty cheap. So that's how we're able to make it work. But still.
The nice thing about pizza is it's like bananas. You know, the price kind of stays constant.
Yeah. And it's good even when it's kind of bad.
You know, George, you just gave me a good idea for a blog post. I think I'm going to have to get out there. I think that when you're in a startup, there's naturally a lot of risk there, and instability and a lot of changing and stuff. And you kind of need to, your role there is to bring some stability. But then when you're in a role, you know, where it's like blue chip company and you're just kind of, you know, making things happen on a day to day basis, you're a small cog in a big machine. I think that in that naturally stable environment, your role is to bring some risk. You know, because I think that we all benefit from some stability and some risk, and we've kind of got to fight against where the organization that we're in naturally is. I think there needs to be some risk. That's where we learn some things. I had one effort, and I told you I work with hardware and IoT a lot, and there's one thing that I was creating that was an attachment for, I haven't finished this yet, but an attachment for a GoPro camera. It's a little box that you attach to the camera, and then you can either throw it or launch it with a slingshot straight up. And so it'll go like 100 feet up in the air, and then it'll detect when it's reached the apex of travel,
really?
Deploy a parachute, and then record all the way down, pointing down at you. So it's like the ultimate aerial selfie, you know, like,
really?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
but really
crazy.
Cheap. You don't have to buy a drone, you know. Yeah, so this is my idea. And so I tack an accelerometer onto this thing, and I'm reading the accelerometer data. Yeah. And I chart it. I drop it into Microsoft Excel, and I'm looking at this chart of my accelerometer data, and I'm expecting to just understand it right off the bat, and I don't. And so I sit back, and I'm looking at this, and then my wife's a lot smarter than me. I bring her in. I'm like, can you look at this and tell me what's going on? I mean, all I did was I took this chip, and I threw it in the air, and then I caught it again, and here's what the accelerometer told me. And I don't understand it. And I kept looking into it. And what I came to determine was that from the moment that accelerometer left my hand, it was under the constant influence of gravity and gravity alone. And so whether it was going up or at its apex or coming down, the force on it was a constant. And so I didn't get that information about. Now, technically, that's a failure, right? I'm working on this project. I walk down this road. And I've just run into a major roadblock. This component is not going to do what I want it to. And you guys probably run into that all the time with your startup. You walk down this road and you go, there's this cool new library, we're gonna use it, da da da.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden you find out this just doesn't work and you've gotta go backwards. Well, really, you know, that's like the old quotes about Thomas Edison, you know, about all of the failures to produce the number of inventions that came about, the number of failures was much, much more. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was my little rant.
That was a great little aside, though. Great, yeah. I feel a bit enlightened here. Yeah.
Okay, well, is there anything else before we wrap up? Anything else you guys want to add?
No, I think, check us out at beagle.ai. Our link will probably be below, but...
Is there something they can get started with? Like if they already know they've got a contract they want to look at?
Right. So we're in private beta right now, but okay. You're welcome to fill out the form and request a demo, and we can certainly upload your agreement, get you collaborating on it with us, so you can have a quick test drive with us alongside to help you out.
What if somebody found it interesting and wants to show somebody? Do you have like a video? This looks like a video. It's got a, what do you call this?
A Dorito chip. Yeah, the Dorito chip play
button.
Click
the Dorito.
So that video won't be a screen cap, at least I don't think it was. We are working on, in our documentation site, mm-hmm. some screen caps. And
okay.
The problem is the UI changes so much that mm-hmm. A screen cap we took last week is now not relevant.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
really, we're grappling with that. We're trying to get kind of the macro idea out and some nice... demo day for MSVs next week, and we plan to show a good screen video.
Good.
So we'll probably be able to recycle that and offer that for you guys to look at. But I actually quite like inviting people in and taking a look as a demo. It's really super easy, and it's quick and simple and at your own pace. So.
Well, the advantage that you guys have with Beagle is that I think it's pretty quick and easy to grok. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, as soon as I see it, I go, oh, wow, there's the value. There it is right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up then. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on Code Chat. See you next time.